to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
What's up, guys? It's Chris again. I'm here for another week of an NXT review. It is the 23rd of October, and let me tell you something. This was actually a decent show tonight. It wasn't, I don't think it was as much as last week was. Last week was an amazing show, which I think every single match was a must-watch. Tonight wasn't the exact same, but it was still a pretty good show. You guys can follow me on Twitter at TheCOPlaceToGo. You can follow me on Twitch at TheCOPlaceToGo as well. Again, like I say every week, I'm very appreciative of being able to do this. The Twitter for the show is at @_WWE_podcast. It's available on Speaker, Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and Radio.com, which is something brand new. Saw that this week. That is awesome. And wherever you are listening to this, it is very, very much appreciated. First thing I usually do is I talk about this week in WWE. So this week in WWE wasn't as... it didn't have the draft. It didn't have some of the little aspects that it did last week. So really for me, all it was seeing some of Raw, seeing some of SmackDown. The ratings are just falling. Now, I don't think it's anything in specific that relates to Raw or SmackDown itself. I think what it is just the fact that people don't watch wrestling on TV as much. The casual fan catches things on YouTube, catches things on the network even. You know, you're paying $10 a month and you're watching some of the highlights, you know, on your YouTubes. Even Hulu, the streaming services are where people are getting all their information from these days. I don't think it's as much the product for the casual fan. For the hardcore fan, I think it is the product in general. The Raw and SmackDown is not good. You have AEW, which is, you know, within what's it been a month now, 3 weeks. Yeah, I think 3 weeks that they've had their live shows. They've been some decent shows. I don't know if they'll be able to keep up the momentum, but they've been really good shows. NXT has been fantastic in the last probably about 6 weeks, I would say. NXT has been really good and almost must see something from every show. And when you look at, you know, WWE, you know, main roster, SmackDown, what is there to really, like, look forward to? Same with Raw. Like, I think that, you know, they were playing off name values for the first week of being live and then doing the draft, but I just feel like it can't keep the momentum. Another thing going on is WWE 2K20. What is it? The hashtag? The fix WWE 20. It is unbelievable how broken that game is. I am done with these type of games until there's a full overhaul. I will not be buying another wrestling game. After seeing this, I mean, there's some really funny memes and video footage and highlights from the game. Like, if you just go on YouTube, Twitter, type in those handles, it's hilarious. So take a look at that if you have bought the game. I know PlayStation is doing some type of refund or money back. Maybe not the whole thing, but they are doing something related to giving money back to people because it is a pretty much terrible experience. And in reality, it's not just the wrestling games. I feel all yearly sports games. Now, I haven't bought a Madden game since, I want to say 2015, I think, might have been the last Madden game I bought. I haven't bought a basketball game since 2K12. I did buy the FIFA game this year. FIFA 20, the one prior to that is FIFA 17. For everyone who buys those games yearly, I just feel like you're wasting money. Yeah, some of the rosters are updated, but it's just not... You need to get a little bit more. And then titles like this show that year to year, one game could be good, the next game is completely broken. Next thing I'm going to talk about is the Crown Jewel. Crown Jewel is coming up here on, I believe it is Halloween, if I'm not mistaken, at, was it 10 a.m. Pacific for me? So we're looking at 1 p.m. Eastern time. And I'm just going to go over 4 matches. There's probably more matches on there. Some I don't care about, like Tag Team Turmoil. That means nothing to me. First match, Brock versus Cain Velasquez. We've talked about it before. I don't understand a title change. I don't understand why Velasquez is being thrown into this, but they want name value. They want people to pay attention to this pay-per-view. It's not even a pay-per-view. It's just like a special show. Next one's going to be The Fiend versus Seth Rollins. I still love The Fiend no matter what happened at Hell in a Cell. I just don't see and understand why there'd be a title change. So I don't know the direction they're going in this. I mean, I would love to see The Fiend with the belt. I'm not huge and high on Seth Rollins, so I don't know where this is going to go. But I don't see where what's going to come out of this that's positive for either guy, to be quite honest. Next is Tyson Fury versus Braun Strowman. To be honest, I don't know why this is happening. I know Tyson Fury has, you know, expressed interest in being in WWE. He is still a professional boxer. He is a champion, like heavyweight champion boxer. What I think this is doing, this is going to be kind of a promotion for Tyson Fury versus Deontay Wilder, because they are going to have a rematch sometime next year. I forgot the date, but it is sometime next year. And I think what this will do is get new fans to tune in. It's going to get those wrestling fans. We'll see him. Nice little cross-promotion type stuff. Last match, which is strange to me because Survivor Series is in November. So this is going to be a Team Hogan versus Team Flair. This all came about on an episode of Miz TV. Hogan and Flair kind of got into it and said, you want to do one more round, blah, blah, blah. Well, let's make a team. So Seth Rollins was the team captain for Team Hogan. With him facing The Fiend, they're going to switch it to Roman Reigns, which, I mean, everyone has their opinion on Roman Reigns. I'm not a big fan. Don't really care. The rest of his team, though, I am a huge fan of. You got Roman Reigns, Ricochet, Rusev, Ali, and Shorty G. I hate that I just said the name Shorty G, but it is Chad Gable. Great team. Small team, if you think about it. You got Reigns and you got Rusev, but, you know, Ricochet, Ali, and Shorty G, all, I don't want to say 205 live guys, but that's kind of what they are. They're all very, very small. You got Ric Flair's team. Randy Orton, King Corbin, Lashley, McIntyre, and Nakamura. How does Team Hogan stand a chance, to be quite honest? Like, look at that team and look at Flair's team. Giants versus small guys. But David and Goliath, David won, Goliath didn't. It is what it is. But it is weird to me that it's so soon a Survivor Series. I mean, isn't this what Survivor Series is? Like, groups of four or five guys? Elimination tag style? Like, isn't that what it is? Why are we doing this 1 month ahead? Honestly, it's to get Hogan and Flair over to Saudi Arabia just to get that Saudi money. That's all it is. Next, we're going to go over birthday. Today, there was only one. It's Carmella. Carmella's 32 today. I will say she looks fantastic for me in 32, but I don't really think she's a great wrestler. She's average at best, below average, probably more realistic. I was there in New Orleans this past year for, when it was in, when WrestleMania was in New Orleans last year, and when she won the title, came up, beat Charlotte Flair. That was a big moment for her, but as a wrestler, I'm just not a very big fan. I like her work as a manager. When she was teamed with Enzo and Cass, everyone has their feelings on Enzo and Cass. As a tag team, I liked them in NXT. Once they got brought up to the main roster, obviously she was not there anymore. But that was her best work. I think she's done decent work with R-Truth as kind of like a comedy skit and just providing the jokes behind the 24/7 and the dance-offs or the whatever they're trying to do for comedy. That is kind of where I see her work now as being better than in-ring work. And then also she's Corey Graves' girlfriend, and there is no hiding that. They don't bounce around that when Corey Graves' wife came out that he, you know, cheated on her with Carmella. There was all kinds of backlash on both of them, you know, and of course they both adamantly denied it, but clearly they're posting pictures all over the place, and they are the new couple in WWE. I'm going to go over some of last week's episode highlights. Let's get to NXT now. So we're going to go over some of the highlights from last week, just briefly, and then we're going to jump into tonight's show. So last week you had the in-ring return of Tommaso Ciampa. Fantastic match. Very, very quick match with Angel Garza. Angel Garza is very, very impressive, but you weren't going to have Ciampa lose. He worked a very, very safe match, which is what's needed, and he came back looking strong. Next match, Matt Riddle versus Bronson Reed. Very strong performance from Matt Riddle. Showed to me that he's more than just a striker. Bronson Reed, gigantic dude. Didn't have a ton of offense, but did just enough to make it look like it wasn't a squash match. You had two fantastic matches I'm going to bring up next. Keith Lee versus Dominik Dijakovic, which leads to tonight's Triple Threat North American Championship, which I would assume would be the main event. After watching it, it was. But I would assume it would be the main event just looking at a Triple Threat match for a championship. Nice grudge match last week. Ended in a no DQ when Roderick Strong came out and hit, I believe it was Keith Lee over the head with the belt. It was a bad ending to a good feud. Hopefully it does continue, but it set up tonight's match. And Pete Dunne versus Damian Priest, great match. Would love to see another. These two guys worked really well together with not a lot of buildup. I mean, I'm assuming they worked live shows, but not a lot of buildup between the two, only for a couple weeks. And it was really good. You got a smaller guy who was very tough and does interesting moves, and Damian Priest, who's huge and does moves that you would expect from cruiserweights. Now, Killian Dane showed up before that match. Where does he fit in this? Is that a feud that's going to lead to a feud with Pete Dunne? Only time will tell. So on to tonight's matches. So tonight, there were less matches than last week. Last week, we had 8 matches in total. This week, we only had 6. They did do some more kind of run-ins and other things rather than matches this week. But last week, there were a couple what I would consider squash and quick matches. This week had a couple more longer matches. So it ended up working out for the same, for the better. First match tonight was Rhea Ripley versus Bianca Belair. I've been saying Rhea Ripley looks fantastic. Strong, bigger than everyone else. But she's only 5'8", but she has that look, the hairstyle, the attitude, the strength in the ring is fantastic. And Bianca Belair, where now that Street Profits are up on Raw, which I believe they're on Raw, she is kind of the NXT vet in the women's division other than Shayna Baszler. I can't think of somebody else in that division who's been there longer, consistently been there longer, who is still on the NXT roster. I remember Bianca Belair in the first Mae Young Classic. I don't know another person, again, I say consistently because Tegan Nox was in that but got injured, and Belair's been there the whole time. So I really do feel that she may have a move coming up, like a lot of the moves, like the Ember Moons and the people like that. Some of them don't make sense. I don't know if hers makes sense unless she gets put with the Street Profits. It was a great match. It was kind of the last couple weeks they've been battling about who's going to face Shayna Baszler in this, and it's going to be me, and then Io Shirai, it's going to be me. It was one person after another. Now, this match kind of set up like who would be the number one contender. That's what I thought. It doesn't end up necessarily working out like that. It was a great match, like I said, with a lot of back and forth. Ripley got her, it's called the Mayor's Grasp. I did not know that last week. It's the stand-up cloverleaf submission. Kind of looks like a calf crusher in a way, but standing in a cloverleaf position. Belair happened to get out of that, got to the ropes, fell outside. So Ripley, you know, rather than just going to get her and put her back in the ring, she hit a front flip cannonball on, I mean, it looked very nonchalant. She just kind of like just dumped herself over, hit her. Great effective move. She throws Belair back in the ring. As Ripley's getting ready to get back in the ring, Io Shirai runs out. I don't know the name of this move, but it's like a modified 619. She did it on the outside along the ring apron and the ropes. Hit Ripley with that. Ref, of course, doesn't see it. She throws her back in the ring. Belair gets up, hits a spear on Ripley. Super close 2 count. Like it was... I actually thought that was it. I thought Belair was going to get the win, which would crush Rhea Ripley's momentum, but she did not. Great move. Ripley gets up. Shirai is standing on the outside of the ring, losing her mind. I don't know the connection between Bianca Belair and Io Shirai, but clearly there is some type of connection there. And out comes Candice LeRae. Now, Candice LeRae and Io Shirai used to be, I don't want to say friends because that's not the right word, but they were cohesive. They were a unit together that got along. Well, clearly that's a problem, and they have an issue now. Candice LeRae came out. She took out Io Shirai. I don't know if that distracted Bianca Belair. It definitely distracted the referee. Couple reversals. Rhea Ripley gets the pin after she hit the pump handle slam, which I believe is called the Riptide. Hit her with that. 1, 2, 3. Rhea Ripley gets the win. I would give that a 3 out of 5 match. Reason I say that is because back and forth action, it set up some of the momentum in the women's division with who's going to be Baszler's next opponent. It also threw out a couple other people opens up a couple feuds, potentially some tag team action down the line, but opens up a couple feuds. 3 out of 5, I would say that if Belair got the win, I'd probably go 2 out of 5 because I think it would crush the momentum. Ripley gets the win, 3 out of 5. Next match is Matt Riddle versus Cameron Grimes. Now, prior to this match, they showed Tyler Bate sitting at ringside. Haven't seen him in a while. Love Tyler Bate. Some of his work with Pete Dunne, absolutely fantastic. Great matches, especially 2 years ago, the UK Championship Tournament, the initial UK Championship Tournament. Fantastic. This match had a lot of the classic Matt Riddle offense. You know, the strikes, the exploder slams, the, you know, his little senton that he does. It's classic Matt Riddle. And honestly, like when he started, first thing first, I'm concerned that he doesn't wear shoes. Like, if that was me, I would have broken my ankle every single match that I'd been in. I have weak ankles though. But Matt Riddle, let me tell you something. His offense is growing on me. It's not the same thing, like, you know, John Cena's five moves of death or whatever it's called. Like, you know which moves are coming, you know what's next. With Matt Riddle, you kind of do, but he switches it up. It's not always in the same rhythm, the same time. The strikes keeps it fresh. It's nice. Now, the guy he was playing or fighting was Cameron Grimes. Cameron Grimes plays this version of, to me, it's like Hillbilly Jim. Like, that's kind of what he looks like, minus the overalls. That's Trevor Lee. So Trevor Lee was in Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and Impact, were probably the two places that he is most famous for now. Trevor Lee was a 3-time Impact X Division champion. You look at him there and you look at him here, to me, I wouldn't know it's the same person. You know, as a casual fan, if I watched both, I mean, I guess I might, but, you know, just knowing who in each different program, you know, when are they going to let Trevor Lee be Trevor Lee? I'm not saying they have to use the same name. They probably can't. But to me, like, he does have enough offense to be good. It's just you're putting him in matches. You know, when he faced Boa, he looked great. And then Boa got destroyed, and then Boa looked fantastic. So I'm looking forward to see where Cameron Grimes goes in the future. I just want Trevor Lee to be Trevor Lee. The end of this match, Matt Riddle picked up the Bro Jerick. What really stood out about this match was, you know how Matt Riddle does his little fist bumps, like sign of respect and things like that. So after the match, he goes to do his fist bump, and Grimes basically was on the outside and was like, yeah, no thanks. He just kind of pushed it away. So Riddle gave the fist bump to Tyler Bate at ringside. I think Cameron Grimes took umbrage to this, pushed Tyler Bate, puts on his little hat, stands up on the ring, walks back over to Tyler Bate. Tyler Bate does the classic, look at my right up in the air, and he got clocked by a left hand. Grimes gets laid out. Tyler Bate, big smile at the end. I'm assuming setting up a feud. It's nice to have Tyler Bate back in NXT. This is a 2 out of 5, nothing special. If I could give it an extra point, it'd be for after the match, kind of setting up something for the future. Next match, we have Breezango and Isaiah Swerve Scott versus the Forgotten Sons. Let me tell you something. Anytime Swerve is in something, I'm excited. It could be a singles match. It could be a handicap match. This is a 6-man tag match. To me, this was just a huge showcase for Swerve. I like Breezango as a team. Both guys have skills. They're a good tag team. Obviously, they're more of a comedy act, but I'd like to think of them as two skilled tag team wrestlers who, solo-wise, are not what they are as a tag team, but they always put on good matches. To add a guy like Isaiah Swerve Scott to them for the match last night only added to him because the other two guys can do high-flying moves, and so it actually makes the whole match good. It doesn't have one person stand out, but either way, Swerve stood out huge. The Forgotten Sons, who they played, I'm going to be honest with you, I don't know a lot about them. I know who the three guys are, but I don't know and haven't seen a lot of them together as a group, working together. I will say they have a great look and great chemistry as a team. They did a triple tag team move where, I forgot, it might have been Wesley Blake, did a suplex off the top rope, and both the other two guys hit diving headbutts on, I believe it was Scott in the ring. I might be wrong, but I believe it was him in the ring. It was a great look, especially Riker and Cutler. They look like true savages to me, kind of like a more jacked version of the War Raiders or the Viking Raiders, whatever you want to call them. And the beards look fantastic. Now I will say, Swerve hit a ton of high flying moves. Biggest one was this moonsault he did off of Riker's chest. So they were fighting in the corner, and Swerve hit him with a just like a sidekick to the head. So Riker's kind of laying up against the top ropes, and Swerve gets up to the top, steps off of his chest, and does a moonsault onto Blake and Cutler outside the ring. Fantastic move. Right after this, Swerve gets the pin after Fandango and Tyler Breeze took out the other two guys. He gets the pin on Wesley Blake with a really nice back kick to the neck. And actually, that took a lot of skill from Wesley Blake, because he had to actually do a front flip basically sitting on his butt. Like, he was sitting straight down. He got a back kick to the neck and did like a front flip, which got the pin. I think this was a fantastic match. 3 out of 5 on this one, mainly because of Isaiah Scott. Huge, huge, huge fan of his. Real high on him. And the Forgotten Sons, to be honest, like, they showed something. 3 out of 5. This was a great match. Next match we had was Angel Garza versus Jack Gallagher. Well, let me restate that. Jack Gallagher. I'm going to call it Gallagher, but it's Gallagher, apparently. Leo Rush for this match is on commentary, so you know what that means. Whoever wins this match is going to call out Leo Rush. So this match, it was an impressive match. Two similar styles, but also Jack Gallagher's, to me, is more of a comedy act. It says he used to be in MMA. I can't find any stats on that. Maybe I'm just not looking hard enough, but I haven't seen anything. I mean, he could have trained in MMA. I don't know, but he does have impressive strength for what he looks like, I guess. He's that British style of moves. He's different than what you typically see, but he is surprisingly strong. Angel Garza, to me, very impressive. Hasn't been in NXT for too long, or at least not on TV for too long. Very, very impressive. His high-flying moves. He also does some comedy, too, with the double pants. So last week he faced Ciampa, and he took his pants off, kind of threw him towards Ciampa. Ciampa used that as kind of a way to get over in the match. Like, he ended up fighting the pants, if that makes any sense to you. He started fighting the pants, which was funny. So in this one, he was getting ready to take his pants off. Gallagher throws him into the ropes, grabs him by the pants. He takes him off. Garza keeps running, hits him with a huge drop kick that lays out Gallagher. Very, very nice. Right after that, it turned into a nice inverted suplex. Used the spring of the ropes, so nice bounce off inverted suplex, and then a nice side super kick while he was on his knees. Got a 2 count. Knew that wasn't going to be the end of the match because it was too soon in the match, but it was a nice sequence of events there for Garza. Probably 2 minutes later, out of nowhere, Gallagher hit a huge headbutt. And this is what's strange about his offense and British fighting in general. Majority of the moves that they do looks like it hurts both guys. And almost the guy who's doing the move, it looks like it hurts more than the other one. I get it, it's that British strong style, but it's strange for me to see that. Like, why would you put yourself in a situation where you would do a move that would hurt you more than the other person? Doesn't make sense to me. Garza got out of this, reversed the momentum, hit a backflip splash. It was a version of a Karana off the middle rope for the pin. And Garza stands up on the top rope, kind of does a discount double check. I want the belt around my waist, points to Leo Rush, saying he wants a shot. Leo Rush is like, you want this? I see this coming up here soon. Hopefully, we set it up for a bigger time than just a normal NXT event. Possibly War Games, who knows? Next match you had was a women's tag team match. It was Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai versus Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke. I want to say two things at the beginning of this match before I get into the match. It was a number one contenders match for who will face the Kabuki Warriors. So WWE's women's tag team champions will be coming down. Kabuki Warriors are Asuka and Kairi Sane. They will be defending against the winner of this match. To be honest, looking at this match, to me, it was no doubt who was going to win. You look at Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai, they're not going to push them. I mean, Marina Shafir and Jessamyn Duke have done absolutely nothing. I'm not high on them. To me, they're awful. They're faces in that four horsewomen of UFC. Rousey and Baszler obviously are the muscle behind it. Rousey not in it currently. Shayna Baszler is the women's champion in NXT. But Shafir and Duke are just faces. To me, they don't exist. I didn't think there was any chance. It was a nice little showcase for Nox and Kai to get some of their moves. Nox did hit the shiniest wizard for the win after the match on the screen. Kabuki Warriors come up, laughed at him a lot, said a lot of stuff in Japanese and had no clue what was happening. But one thing I said that I heard that they said they had no chance. This match, give a 1 out of 5. If this wasn't on the card, I'd be perfectly fine. It could have been a dark match. Called it, said, hey, this is who we're going to have fight. Would have been just as good as what I watched. To be honest, 6 matches, 5 of them on here are worth seeing. This match, take a break. Go get some food. Go to the bathroom. Do whatever else you got to do. You don't need to see this match. Doesn't do anything. Told you who wins. Told you what happens. We will see them next week. And on to the main event. The main event was a match that, I'm going to be honest with you, if you're going to watch one match on this entire card, I would watch Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair too, just because it sets things up. But if you're going to watch one match, it's this. It not only was a great main event, but even after the match proved just to be fantastic. The entire thing I could watch a bunch of times. I when I get home from work today, I'm 100% watching this match again because it was fantastic. So it was a triple threat match. Keith Lee, Dominik Dijakovic, and Roderick Strong. It was for the North American Championship. Like I said earlier when I went over what happened last week, it was set up because Strong interfered, created a no contest in the grudge match between Keith Lee and Dijakovic. It was a fantastic match. Great main event. This is a match that it had. I say this every week. There's a takeover feel on a match on every card. This was that one. 100%. I want to see it again. Two giants in the ring. What do you got? Dijakovic 6'7", 270. Keith Lee 6'2", 320. And what, Roderick Strong, 3'8". I mean, he's very, very small. Great offense for what he does. I mean, his offense works with these guys as his strikes and quick moves can break them down. The first move in the match obviously goes against what I just said because Roderick Strong went for a drop kick on Keith Lee and he bounced right off him. It's almost like he didn't exist. So that being said, Roderick Strong's moves do work with guys like this. That move did not too early in the match. It's a whole thing like the average guy has to break down the giant for it to work. That's what had to happen. And it did happen throughout the match. It just didn't happen at the beginning. So that was the first move that to me was just like, wow, okay, here's where we're going in this match. Next move that really stood out was Dominik Dijakovic hit a suplex on Keith Lee onto Roderick Strong, who's laying on the ground. Now, he hit him kind of with the back of his neck like a senton, something Ricochet would do or Jeff Hardy. You know, it wasn't the full brute force. I just think Strong was a little too close for that. Hopefully they set it up on purpose because, you know, you got Keith Lee who's 320 pounds. You're going to kill Roderick Strong doing that. Next move that was huge was the Keith Lee. When he powerbombed Dijakovic, who was setting up Roderick Strong for a superplex. So Keith Lee did I'm trying to think the first time I ever saw this. It might have been a John Cena walking over to the ropes. You got the guys up at the top. He comes underneath, picks him up for a powerbomb, and it lifts everybody else up. That's what Keith Lee did. Now, this was kind of scary if you watch it, because if you look at Keith Lee, he looks like he starts to lose control of the hold as he's lifting them over. I don't know if it was done on purpose, but Dijakovic didn't have Strong lifted very high. Like, he didn't have him lifted at the same time. He had him at about a 45-degree angle. So as he had them here, I was concerned that Strong was going to fall flat down, which where Keith Lee was, could have taken his knees out. It would have been rough. I just think the strength of everybody, I mean, Strong to hold, Dijakovic to hold and then pull over, massive strength on display, great move, possibly scary though. I was very concerned for Keith Lee. Like, after that, he kind of fell out of the ring. Wasn't hurt, it was fine, but it had potential for a serious injury. Next big move, you had Roderick Strong. He had an angle slam on Keith Lee after hitting him with like five or six leg strikes. This was a back-and-forth match. I mean, you didn't know who was going to win. Majority of the power moves, obviously, done by Dijakovic and Lee. Majority of the good moves in the match, Dijakovic and Lee. But Roderick Strong was always there to hit one of his patented backbreakers or these kicks. He had an angle slam on Keith Lee. I mean, you know, obviously there's got to be some strength there because you got a guy who's, you know, probably 7 inches shorter and weighs probably 150 pounds less. Maybe not that much. Maybe like 120 pounds less. It's just, like, you know, it was a great match overall. Dijakovic then hit a choke slam on Keith Lee from the top rope, which leads us towards the finish. Back and forth, back and forth. Keith Lee ends up hitting a massive sit-down powerbomb on Dijakovic on the top rope, which this had the feel of like Mark Henry, Big Show, or, you know, Breaking the Ring. It had the feel of just the absolute mass and power of this move. Dijakovic rolls out of it, dead on the ground, but rolls out of it. And Roderick Strong, the ultimate opportunist, comes by, hits a running knee to the side of Keith Lee's head, gets the pin, 1-2-3. Roderick Strong retains. Great match, but the best part of the match was still yet to come. After the match, the Undisputed Era, they ganged up and beat down Keith Lee for a little bit. Didn't last too long, but Keith Lee was getting manhandled by four guys. Out comes Tommaso Ciampa. I don't know if he came out to save Keith Lee or more or less he came out just to fight the Undisputed Era. Then, not to a big surprise, Johnny Gargano runs out. Gargano runs out and joined Ciampa. They stood there, Ciampa with his crutch. So it's 2-on-4. Out comes Finn Balor. When Balor's music hit, I go, okay, this is kind of leading up to where I've been saying the last couple weeks of where I think potentially War Games is going to be. Last week I said Undisputed Era versus Balor, Ciampa, Gargano, and Velveteen Dream. Everyone has heat with somebody else. Perfect. That's not what happened. Not at all. Out of nowhere, Balor's getting ready to take his jacket off. He bicycle kicks Gargano. Just stands there. Ciampa looks over at him, and then Ciampa gets beat down by the Undisputed Era. Outside the ring. I mean, he does a little stare down with Adam Cole. I don't know if it was a more like, yeah, let's do this, or it's just kind of like a this is what I'll do to somebody type. You never know. It was wild to me. Outside the ring, Gargano's kind of up against the barricade on the side. Balor did his launching dropkick, which put Gargano through the barricade on the side of the ring. He was done. And then he brought him more towards the center of the walkway to the ring and hit him with it was like a suplex that led to a DDT. I don't know that move. It looked awful. I think Gargano was hurt. Landed right on his head. It was intense. It was a great move, great finish to a match, great way to set up War Games in the future. This match got a 4 out of 5 easily. Aftermath makes it a 5 out of 5. The entire product in this match was good, and I'm going to count the beatdown after as part of the match. 5 out of 5 total. It's fantastic. I'm going to go over what stood out match-wise. Like I said, there were two less matches. It kind of got a quicker feel to it because the matches that were there lasted a little bit longer, but it wasn't like match after match after match. The three matches that really stood out for me, Ripley versus Belair, continues their feud, continues the march towards Shayna Baszler, who's going to face her, and an added Io Shirai and Candice LeRae sets up more towards that feud, also potential tag team. Do we see LeRae and Ripley versus Belair and Shirai? Who knows? Everybody doesn't get along, but who knows what we'll see. Angel Garza versus Jack Gallagher is a nice way to set up the feud, to start with Leo Rush, whoever was going to win that. The match had enough energy in it to kind of stand out on a card that would be like the second or third best match. And then, of course, the North American Championship match I was just telling you about is a sneaky win for Roderick Strong. Keeps Lee and Dijakovic still unsettled business. Who knows? It could set them up as a tag team. Could you imagine that tag team? Nobody is stopping them. There is no tag team that is going to beat them. The promos tonight, there was a nice video package for Tommaso Ciampa showed him during his surgery, showed him giving up his belt in his return, and his classic phrase, Goldie, Daddy's home, you know, set all that stuff up, which I love all their video packages every week. It gives something on everybody. 2 weeks ago, Gargano, last week, Finn Balor, this week, Tommaso Ciampa. There was another video package with Killian Dane. It has him standing by like this like fire pit. He's taping up his hand and fingers. It says Pete Dunne tried to break his fingers, but now he's going to break Pete Dunne. Even though earlier in the night, Pete Dunne said he's not concerned about Killian Dane. I think in general, this is a very nice setup to a feud between the two of them. But where do we go with Pete Dunne and Damian Priest? I don't know. Was that a one-off? Like, I think the match was good enough to where they got to have another one. So where do we go from here? I mean, first things first, you know, is this a heel turn for Finn? Because, you know, as he's sitting there, Undisputed Era is doing their little Undisputed Era symbol. And they're very, you know, just standing there kind of staring him down. Finn Balor kind of did his little old school bullet club gun point down to Gargano, who's on the ground. What does this set up? Does it set up something like a huge heel turn? Or was it just this is who he's going to be, a badass heel who is going to sit there and fight for what he believes in? I mean, it's just time will tell on that. Next week, we do have three matches that have already been listed, which is fantastic. I like knowing these matches from the beginning. Io Shirai versus Candice LeRae. You can obviously see that coming with what happened in the Rhea Ripley match. You got the Kabuki Warriors versus Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai. Again, that was a number one contendership match. So that one's going to be next week. I just don't see the Kabuki Warriors losing, especially being that they're WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. I could see this working out as some type of maybe DQ, because Tegan Nox and Dakota Kai are the hot new thing for women's NXT tag teams. I just can't see them losing. And then you have Cameron Grimes versus Tyler Bate. That was made official after the punch. That should be a good match. I'm excited to see Tyler Bate wrestle. And he's someone you don't see wrestle very often. So it's something that I'm truly looking forward to. And so the last couple weeks, one of the last things I've been saying is like where I feel we're going to go for War Games. My War Games predictions completely thrown out the window. Completely trashed now. So I'm just going to throw some stuff out there for War Games. I mean, I'm thinking there's going to be like a 3 or 4 way women's match against Baszler. It's kind of what they do at takeovers, where I think we're going to see a new champion. I do not think Baszler will keep the championship. Next thing, I think it's going to be Ciampa versus Cole. I don't think Undisputed Era is going to be set up for a War Games style match. If it is, it's just going to be a 3-man. So maybe they add, you know, nobody likes them, so they're not going to add anybody. And then I 100% see Balor versus Gargano. It set it up for a big-time match. They should put on a clinic in the ring. Gargano does it with everybody, with Andrade, with Ciampa. He's a master at putting on good matches. And that's going to be it for me today, guys. Please feel free to reach out to me on Twitter at TheCOPlaceToGo with any questions or comments. I would love to cover them on a future show, next week's show, anything. Feel free to like, follow, anything you would like to do, any type of comment. I really, really appreciate it. And as usual, I will talk to you next week.